Journalists caught up in rapid social change and unrest, as Hannah Dreyer certainly is in Venezuela, have to explain the complexities of a place not necessarily well known to their audiences, and also try and make urgent yet another place in the world veering towards chaos. Venezuela is lucky to have an Associated Press reporter based there, but other conflict zones like Mali and the Central African Republic are invisible to the outside world much of the time. A study from the Pew Research Center finds that despite the mobility and immediacy of the digital age, the public is still cautious and discerning when it comes to news sources and organizations. There is a huge hunger for storytellers to trust, and lots of stories out there that need to be told. The nonprofit Global Reporting Center is trying to bridge that gap by combining reportorial expertise with on-the-ground citizen reporters to highlight neglected issues and conflicts around the world. Peter Klein is director for the Global Reporting Center and says he's been looking for all kinds of new ways to tell important stories.
There is something fundamentally flawed with how Western journalists typically do global journalism, and that's what we're trying to challenge.
When you say global, you mean in any language, in any place, in any culture, trying to reach an audience that's, you know, not of those places, that's basically a global audience.
Right. I mean, I think it's on a number of levels. Typically, a foreign correspondent would come from New York or London, fly into a place, observe what's going on, hire up a local fixer to, you know, get some help on the ground, and then come back and tell everyone back home what happened. And that's really valuable. And I've done that. You've done that. But that's not the only method for doing international reporting. So we thought, okay, if we come in as outsiders, as foreign correspondents and parachute in, we could hire the best local people to help us, whatever. But we're going to have a very specific lens. You know, all the sort of tropes will be trotted out. When you talk to people who actually know these issues and who live in these cultures, they're like, you don't get it. It's much more complex than that. And complexity is something we're kind of allergic to in journalism sometimes, right? We want to simplify the story. We want to tell people back home.
Yeah, I've never heard an editor say, but you're missing all of the complexity.
A little more nuance. I want more nuance. You know, what we've done with this project about xenophobia is we said, okay, let's empower people in these communities to tell stories with our help, with our, you know, scrutiny and with our guidance. But people in the Roma communities, people in Jewish communities, people in Muslim communities and immigrant communities, and even in fascist communities. Tell us your stories, what's going on. So it's sort of a ground up kind of project. And it's been really wonderful. I mean, we have only a little bit of funding at this point, so we've made these little shorts, but we're trying to build this into something much larger. So it's an example of kind of flipping the narrative a little bit and flipping the power dynamic and empowering people to tell stories without us necessarily being the kind of smart Westerners coming in and lecturing everybody.
How is this different from the attempts that are being made by organizations to try to recruit people inside inaccessible places like Syria, where Western journalists can't get in and there's no parachuting at all? You know, tell local people to take some of the risks that Western journalists typically would have in the past.
We certainly have seen somewhat of a shift because of security issues. You know, it's not like we're not going into Syria as outsiders because we think, gosh, it would be really great to empower Syrian journalists to kind of embrace the nuance.
Yeah.
It's just like, man, it's too hard. But I'll be honest, we've even sort of stepped into that in a way. We just launched a project recently with a group of radio journalists in Mogadishu. So Somalia is one of the most difficult places, a hostile place to be a journalist, both a Somali journalist and certainly a Western journalist. How do you tell the story of what's going on in Somalia? Wouldn't it be interesting to somehow see the world through their eyes? So we reached out to a number of different journalists in a reputable journalism organization, and we said, look, would you be willing to like wear police cams on your bodies just to sort of document the Somali journalist's perspective of reporting in Mogadishu? And sadly, if they do that for a while, you're going to see some pretty bad stuff and some interesting things. And then they can then take that material and put it in context and explain it. And they were over the moon because like nobody cares about what's going on in this country. And we're just sort of preaching to the choir here. We're telling, you know, our neighbors and our friends what's going on in their own community. They know that. But no one outside knows, right? Because coming in as outsiders to do the story about Somalia is in some ways prohibitively dangerous.
How does technology enable this, both in terms of allowing you to get cameras into places that are difficult, as well as signals out in terms of the ease of connectivity, which wasn't the case 10 years ago?
In terms of global journalism, it's transformative. You know, we had a 19-year-old kid, you know, young guy in Malmo, Sweden, a Jewish guy. who had an anti-Semitic incident in his high school. And he wanted to basically tell the story about how people in Sweden are sweeping under the rug this whole issue. You know, everyone knows what's going on, but nobody wants to talk about it. So no journalism training, no equipment. And he said, well, I'll just film it on my cell phone. And it's such an obvious solution, right? So I think that there's, on that level, you can tap stories in ways you never could before.
And the potential there is really earth-shaking because, unlike the Breivik story in Norway, which we understood only in hindsight what was going on under the surface in Norway, and Norwegians themselves even didn't get that until the slaughter that took place, you have a chance, God forbid, to precede something and possibly even help people understand what's going on before an incident like that takes place.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think part of what you can do if you take the money out of the equation, you can basically decide, I think it's worthwhile journalistically to stay on this story for a long, long period of time, which is not typical in a mainstream newsroom.
So it's bylines, it's text, it's broadcast, it's internet-based, but it's almost anything. It's trying to transform the ways in which stories are told, not only who's telling them.
Right. I think it's the ways they're told, who's telling them, and who it's going to.
Peter, it's so great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
It's great to see you.
Former 60 Minutes producer and professor at the University of Vancouver, Peter Klein is the director for the nonprofit Global Reporting Center.